gather round. I'm glad everybody came out tonight. As we stand on our neighborhood corner, know that this fire that's burning represents the passion you have. Listen. I recognize all of you. Every creed and color. With that being said,
We had!
Say what?
Now beat that.
Oh yeah!
Now what we want you all to do is sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. And if you dig it, let me hear your finger snap, y'all.
Now before I finish, let me just say, I did not come here to show out. Did not come here to impress you. Because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I'm gone. And I don't care what you think about me. But just remember, when it hits the fan, brother, whether it's next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll never be able to say that these brothers lied to you, Jack.
Okay, I'll reload it.
From the sports bars to the stands, we are the voice of the fans. You are now plugged in to your sports mixtape. This is the Section 357 show, the Ball Street Journal, and you're hanging out with Floyd, D, Ron, and Trey. We are your Ball Street Journal reporters, quote-unquote. Fellas, how you doing?
Doing absolutely fantastic. Really loving the show these days. Loving the time just to sit down and talk sports from a different perspective with the greatest crew that there is in the world. So without further ado, please, let me toss it over to my man, Ronnie. How you doing?
Section 357. So this week, we're going to delve into the subject of being the man. Is it really all it's cracked up to be? Talk about Dwight Howard and other stars of movies, sports, who have become the man or the woman, and all that comes with it. Is it something that you really want to be? But I know one guy who is the man out there in L.A. It's my man, L.A. Trey. Trey, what's going on, sir?
My brother's my brother. I might not be the man, but I'm the man beside the man. I can't wait to get this thing started. Let's go.
This is the Section 357 show, where we always try to bring you a different side of the sporting conversation. Do check us out and pass the word on Twitter again at Section 357. Ron, you talked about being the man, and to quote one of our favorite wrestlers of all time, Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, where he says, to be the man, you've got to beat the man. And while that does not always hold in the sporting world, everybody feels like they want to be the man, but it's not always what it's cracked up to be. So, Ron, give us your first thoughts on what it's like to embrace this challenge of being the man when it comes to sports.
Where this conversation came from was, like many of our topics, a text conversation, a back and forth between me and Floyd regarding Dwight Howard. And one of the things that came up in the discussion was, is Dwight Howard really built for being the man? Obviously, he left L.A. to go to Houston. He seems to have wanted the spotlight, the celebrity, the perks, but can't handle the responsibility and the criticism, which always brings us to, well, what Jordan would have done or what would this great player would have done. I think we come to realize, fellas, being the man, not only is it not for everybody, it's pretty rare to be a Jordan, a Denzel Washington, a Jack Nicholson, a Jay-Z. The lead dog in a particular field is a really tough and rare position. So let's just kind of swing the ball around the horn real quick. Trey, out there in L.A., supporting actor and have a long career or the short career of being the man, what you think is better?
If I had to choose, I wouldn't mind being a supporting actor with a very, very long, stress-free career. Like you said, being the man has a lot of responsibilities that come with it. And many people aren't built for the limelight. When it comes to the entertainment field, you're everything you do is going to constantly be criticized, critiqued, and questioned. But if you're ready for that, and some people are built for that type of fame, people like Jay-Z, people like Denzel Washington, they shine under those type of circumstances. But there are other people that like Philip Seymour Hoffman, actors like them, who are exceptional at what they do, but they don't necessarily have to have the spotlight. If you're going to go that way and you really enjoy the craft of whatever it is that you do, be it acting or being a sportscaster or being an athlete, if you truly enjoy the sport, then don't try to be the man. Just be happy with what it is that you're doing, because the pressure that's going to come along with being the man is going to make you hate what you truly love.
Turning this back to sports, I'm going to flip it back over to my man Floyd, ATL resident. You and I in our conversation talked about how Dwight Howard lived a very insulated life pretty much until he got to the pro. He was a top three player in high school basketball that no one had heard of, not even really people in Atlanta. So, Jay, does this decision for him to go from L.A. to Houston, does this more kind of speak to this sort of insulated life he lived, or does he truly have a character flaw that was exposed during the situation?
You always hear the phrase, heavy is the head that wears the crown. Because when you are the man, when you are the top dog, you have to deal with all of the issues, the troubles in your kingdom that come with being that guy. You have to be the person who is leading and solving problems and putting the city, the team, the organization, the business on your back. And Dwight Howard, in my estimation, never had to do that in Atlanta, even as a high school player. When you look at folks who have had storied sports careers, even in high school, they kind of get used to being that guy very early on in life. And you can tell maybe in how they handle their business later on in life, how well they did when they were younger in those same situations. So I think that Dwight Howard, in leaving Los Angeles, to me, in part, was about Dwight Howard wanting to escape the scrutiny of the Los Angeles media market, as well as ESPN, if you will, and all that comes with that. And I feel like it's a return, if you will, to wanting to be in a place with less scrutiny, less attention on you. And I'm not sure if Dwight Howard, even going back to his days in Orlando, could have ever thrived in a situation where he is the biggest star in town. Regardless of what he says in terms of what he wanted to be, his actions to me dictate, or at least further explain, that maybe that's not what he really wanted.
Is that okay? Like, as sports fans, people out here in the Twitterverse and the social media, if a guy doesn't want to be that, the man, alpha dog, whatever term you want to throw, should we as fans be okay with that?
Well, absolutely, it's fine with that. Absolutely. There are some teams, there are some cities, there are some personalities that embrace the team aspect. They embrace that group aspect. But I think there's a reason, and I know that there's positional differences. While we don't see the Josh Smiths of the world, while we don't see the Dwight Howards involved in this, are they better than Jordan conversation? We see this conversation between Jordan, between Kobe, and between LeBron. And certainly with Jordan and Kobe, you saw that want, that desire to be the man, that killer instinct that I want to take the last shot, I want to be in the spotlight, I am the man, so judge me as the man. And that's why LeBron, with his positional similarity, get his mental difference, has been involved in a lot of these conversations. We had this conversation a lot with LeBron over the years. Does he or does he not want to take that final shot? Does he have that killer instinct? Does he have that clutch factor? But we don't see that in any way, shape, or form with Dwight Howard, okay? And you can see it in his decision-making. So that's what changes it. You can see that Dwight Howard doesn't want to be the man. And that's okay if you can end up in the right environment. And certainly, as we said, he wasn't in the right environment in L.A., but there are other teams out there where you can be in that right environment. I hate to bring up this third-string quarterback, but this is a quarterback in the NFL who does want to be the man, but is on a team now where there is another man, and it's more so about the team. So I think as sports fans, we can accept that when a player is willing to put the team first. But in terms of Dwight Howard specifically, he's been waffling too much amongst a lot of things, but certainly in between being, does he want to be the man or does he not want to be the man? Just make a decision.
Guys, can we shift away from Dwight Howard specifically and maybe talk, I guess, more generally? You brought up LeBron James to a certain extent. Even when you look at the music landscape, you have lead singers like a Mick Jagger, or Jay-Z, or Eminem, you know, where you have guys who have their crew, right? They have their own crew, but they're going to always be the man of their crew. And I wanted to ask you all this. When have we seen examples of guys who have progressed to being the man by virtue of their talent, or by virtue of just sort of the public recognizing that early on, maybe not so much, but just over the arc of their career, this guy has become the man. Maybe when we weren't even paying attention.
That's an easy one. And I think this is something that came up during our debate over the Hip Hop Hall of Fame. But I think Russell Simmons kind of started off in the music industry in the background. He was not really the guy on the microphone. He was the guy behind the glass in the studio. Yet due to his success, over time, he ended up being the man. And I think that's what you can see in some instances. I'm trying to think of a situation in sports where we can see that, and maybe it has more to do with the coaching ranks and the player ranks, or even maybe it would do with somebody which was a marginal player that ended up being a coach. But that's where it comes in. Somebody that has success, but they're not in the spotlight, but due to their continued success, ends up in the spotlight. I think that was the point you were asking for, Floyd, and I think Russell Simmons is a good example of that.
I think a person that might fit this pretty well is Andre 3000. When OutKast dropped Southern Playalistic, it was just OutKast. I barely even knew who Big Boy or Andre 3000 was. It was just OutKast. And then when the second album dropped, AT Aliens came out, it was still kind of the same way. It wasn't until, for me personally, until around their third album that you started really kind of separating the two. And then you started really seeing like that there was a very obvious difference between the two MCs as they were, you know, doing their business. And then came the Love Below album, when you finally got a clear-cut look at 3000 and another clear-cut look at Big Boy. And I think, honestly, one of the main reasons why they won the Grammy wasn't necessarily for Big Boy's part, but really was for 3000's part. He was just that good. And but the thing is that he's always been that good. It's just we didn't really get a chance to really see it until he kind of separated himself from the group as a whole. And now 3000 himself is more of a household name than OutKast as a household name. He's grown to a level that he's bigger than the group that he kind of initially started for. There's more people really looking for a 3000 album, it seems to me, than they're looking for an OutKast album. Now, don't get me wrong. There's no disrespect to Big Boy, because Big Boy is amazing. I mean, he's really, really good, exceptionally good MC. But 3000 was just so exceptional at what he did. He ended up becoming the man and not even trying.
I'll jump in here. And first of all, I want to thank you, Trey, for bringing up Andre 3000, so that I would not have to and appear like I am the ATL homer, because he is a guy who I could think of who over time has become the man. And when you become the man, you have to take on the responsibilities of people taking shots at you. So when you think about a guy like 3000 who changed his style up from a dress standpoint, a musical standpoint, and the whole Erykah Badu relationship, still again, not too much of that really bothered him. And I think that you saw a guy, back to the creative side of things, who grew up before our eyes and evolved, I guess is probably an even better word to say. He evolved and dealt with the criticism, kept making great music, and then really took off and distinguished himself from his partner in crime and in rhyme, Big Boy. I think folks could also make the same argument for CeeLo of Goody Mob a little bit, although I think that for most musical observers, CeeLo was always kind of the man in a Goody Mob, and it was only a matter of time before he kind of broke away and went solo. So CeeLo may not be the best example of that, kind of staying along with that Outkast Goody Mob parallel right there.
I think the issue you have as fans of a sport, whether it's hip-hop, is when a guy is perceived to have alpha dog, the man talent, and for whatever reason doesn't want him. I think that's one of Floyd's longstanding issues with a guy like Joe Johnson when he was with the Hawks. And Floyd and I talked about this offline before. Joe Johnson had alpha dog talent, had alpha dog contract, and just for whatever reason, it wasn't there. If you ever go back and read articles about Rasheed Wiles, another one of Floyd's guys from North Carolina, longtime NBA star. Rasheed Wiles was always considered one of the most talented guys in the NBA. But the numbers and the resume didn't match what was elite talent. So I think the issue that fans have is when we see it, that a guy has it, and for whatever reason, he just won't use it. You talk about flip side, a guy who wasn't clearly as talented was a guy like Michael Irvin in the NFL. Michael Irvin was not purely talented like Randy Moss, purely talented like a Terrell Owens, but because he just had the mentality that says, I am the best receiver, or I believe I'm the best receiver, Super Bowl rings, all pro and Hall of Fame, off a guy who wasn't supremely gifted. And I think that's my issue with guys is when it's there and for whatever reason, you just don't want to. And I guess I can't knock a man living a comfortable life as that second guy, but when it's so clearly there and you don't, that's my thing. It tends to upset people. Fellas, what do you think?
Ron, I think part of that probably speaks to the fact that to be a professional athlete, you're probably in that 1% of 1% of the population. And for all of the armchair quarterbacks, armchair basketball players, et cetera, out there who see this talent on display, and they often imagine if they had the opportunity, what they would do with it. That's the frustrating part to a lot of athletes. I'm sorry, not athletes, but a lot of observers, if you will, that they see it, they imagine themselves having it and what they would do with it. And then when they don't see the reality of the situation matching their imagination in some instances, that's when you get the sharp judgment and criticism, I believe.
I think people don't understand the real stress that's involved with being the man, because there's so much riding on your shoulders, especially if you're a professional athlete. It's not just about your team. It's not about just winning. It goes beyond the game. It goes beyond because you have to manage your team. You have to manage yourself. You have to manage your family. You have to manage your future. You have to manage sponsors. You have to manage your agent, your manager. You have to manage fan perception. And it's not, like you said, with the armchair quarterback. It's easy for us to sit back and be like, oh, well, I would have just did this, that, and the third, and blah, 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 blah. Because for them, it's not an instance of a quick decision, and then there's a result. For them, it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year problem. It looms on them. It weighs on their shoulder every waking moment of their existence. And it's easy to sit back and talk about what you can and can't do when you can go back to your normal life of being a postman or whatever it is that you do, and turn Sunday's night's game off. These people live this. It is their life. It is their livelihood. It's in their DNA. When you have that type of drama and that type of stress of trying to be number one and maintain all of that every waking moment of the day, it will completely change your perception. And you get a clearer understanding of why people who are in the number one spotlight buckle and fold so easily.
I want to take it back to Ronnie's specific example. I love that he brought up the wide receiver position in the NFL. It's a very interesting position where you need to be dominant. In some ways, we've seen the rise of the diva in the NFL wide receiver position. But in many ways, it's a position that's dependent on the quarterback. So you look at a player like a Jerry Rice, who was the man, yet at the same time on his team, he was almost always secondary the man to his quarterback. You know, you look at the Tim Browns, the Marvin Harrison of the world. Players who were indeed the man, but were able to play that second fiddle role because in the NFL world, the quarterback eventually is the man. And it takes a great quarterback, it takes a great man playing quarterback to make a great wide receiver.
So you heard it here, folks. Sometimes it's a little bit better to be Robert Horry than it is Charles Barkley. Let's take a quick timeout, and when we come back, the player circle. Once again, here on the Section 357 show, we'll be right back.
Other now for so long, like an archaeologist looking for bones. We used to do it to the slow songs. Then our hormones will mix up from the sweat, cause I feel it drip drop from my pecs to your chest. I send a text from the jet just to get you slippery. Memories of you soaking wet, that's the only time I might slip. Then I slide between them thighs, she keep it tight lipped like a vice grip. And so private, mum's a wordless, I'm knee deep inside it. Three's company, not crowded. I get cake, eat it too, and apple pie slices with the ice cream icing Alamo. She inspires and excites me, now you know.
Idea. Why don't we both stay home, and if the doorbell goes ding dong, we can act like we're not here. Put them house coats on and take them right back off as a result, like we work at IKEA. Test every piece of furniture to see if it is stable. You want to take it out on me, then do it on the table. Blow to the head, it's fatal. Wait, you get a load of me. I ain't joking. Dark Knight Batman, and I'm poking that pussycat woman. Pokemon, baby, gon' push you back home, and hoping that maybe you'll wake up in the morning and forget about it all. I hate to see you sad, so if anybody call, tell them you will let them know when we fall back to Earth, go berserk, baby.
I've been looking for you.
Welcome back to the Section 357 show. This is the Player Circle, where we shine a spotlight on some of the good and sometimes not so good aspects of the sporting world. But let's start off with some of the good, the HBCU Player of the Week. Big shout, Ron. What do you have, man?
Big shout out to Andre Nelson, Morehouse College 2013, invited to the Orlando Magic Summer League team. So, Morehouse, stand up. Shout out to Harold Ellis, who's down working with the Orlando Magic front office, giving the brother a chance. So, you never know what this could lead to for the young man. And, you know, Morehouse, we just don't send hoopers to the league like that. So, our HBCU Baller of the Week, Andre Nelson of D. Morehouse College. We also have a second HBCU Baller of the Week, and this goes to the athletic department of Bethune-Cookman. They're launching a new campaign, hashtag 24 countdown to the kickoff, leading up to their opening game against Tennessee State on September 1st. They've also redone some of their Twitter stuff where all of their athletic teams now have their own Twitter handle. So we talked about on the show, HBCU really needing to step up their social media marketing and campaigning. Well, Bethune-Cookman is definitely doing that. So Bethune-Cookman, another HBCU Player of the Week.
We just had a conversation about being the man. But when it comes to the MMA, you can't talk about being the man without mentioning Anderson Silva. He's had a stellar UFC appearance. He's been defending his championship for quite some time, and at the ripe age of 38, he finally met his match against Chris Weidman. In the second round, about a minute and 18 seconds into the second round, I don't know what happened. Silva, who has been known for taunting, decided that he wanted to get inside of Chris's head, taunted, and got knocked all the way out. I mean, cold, sleep, feet up. Now, I know what you're thinking. How is this going to be a candidate for the imaginary player when Silva's had such a long, outstanding career? Well, here's why. He got knocked out. He's 38. He's at the end of his career. But unfortunately, he still has 10 fights left on his contract. He made an announcement after the fight was over that he's no longer going to try and contend for the championship anymore, and that he will play the remainder of his 10 fights out due to his contract, which means that we're not going to see the A game of Silva anymore. No more stellar knockouts, no more quick speeds, no more cool tap outs. More than likely, in those 10 fights, I predict Silva will probably get knocked out at least two more times. Why? Because his heart isn't in it. And if you're going to compete in the MMA, your whole heart has to be in it, or you're going to get put to sleep. So now we have a champion that's fallen from grace. He's no longer the man, but an imaginary player.
And guys, for my international player of the week, big shout out to a guy who literally put the country, his country, on his back and got it done. Andy Murray ending the 77-year drought of a player from Great Britain winning at Wimbledon. So he took home the title, beating Novak Djokovic, and a very emotional scene, lots of good vibes all the way around. So just really want to give some love to Andy Murray and his conquest, if you will, in taking home the Wimbledon crown, for this year at least. With that being said, passing it over to our main man, Sun D. Sun D's masterpiece of the week. What did you have, man?
Hey, Mon. My masterpiece of the week is the Bob Marley. We talk about summer drinks. We talk about mixed drinks. I'm not a fan of having too many drinks in your mixed drink. You know, I'm an alcohol and ice, alcohol and water type person. But if you want to do a nice, fruity, good-looking summer drink, may I recommend the Bob Marley. It's a great-looking drink. You put a little grenadine at the bottom, add a layer of creme de menthe, add some 151 cream de banana, and then add some rum to the top. Get a nice little layer that looks like the Jamaican flag. A very colorful summer drink, yet still tastes good and still has that kick to it.
Shout out to Jamaica. Shout out to Perfect Bartender, who came onto the show recently to talk about how to enjoy your summer cocktails, wines, and beverages in a very responsible manner. So with that being said, we're going to close out the show. Thank you all for hanging out with us. This has been the Section 357 show, where we always have the best seats in the house. Check us out on Twitter at Section357, on Tumblr at Section357.tumblr.com. And you can also listen to the show via the Stitcher app for mobile devices, as well as iTunes and Apple Podcasts. With that being said, good luck to you and your favorite sports teams out there, wherever you might be. This is the Section 357 show. where we always have the best seats in the house. Until next time, take care.